The third case for oral argument this morning is DeSmit Insurance Company, Appellant versus Hunter Chiropractic Clinic, Appalachia. For the appellant, we have Mr. Larry Von Walden, attorney from Rapid City. And for the Appalachia Clinic, we have Mr. James Even, an attorney from Sioux Falls. Mr. Von Walden, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, counsel. Your Honor, the issue now before you is whether an assignment of the proceeds of a personal injury action is enforceable in the state of South Dakota. On June 5 of 2007, there was a collision at an intersection in Sioux Falls. Opal Amundson, a DeSmit Insurance Company insured, collided with an automobile that was being driven by 85-year-old Henry Lynch of Sioux Falls, and that vehicle was also occupied by Mr. Lynch's 87-year-old wife, Dorothy. After the accident on the following day, on June 6th of 2007, the Lynches went to the Unruh Chiropractic Clinic in Sioux Falls. When they arrived there, they were asked by the chiropractor what had happened in the accident and who was at fault, and Mr. Lynch told them that it was the DeSmit insured Opal Amundson. And he also asked who the insurance company was, and Mr. Lynch told him that as well. After that time, immediately at that time, the chiropractor presented a paper that was entitled Assignment of Proceeds. And Mr. Lynch, in his affidavit that he filed in connection with this action, said he wasn't completely sure what that meant, but he signed it, and he instructed his mentally impaired wife, Dorothy, to sign it as well. There came a time, the treatments by the chiropractor took place between June 6 of 2007 and July 24, 2007. When Mr. Lynch received his first chiropractic bill, he noticed that the chiropractic charges were higher than they had been before the accident. And he then became concerned about what was going on, and he visited with the chiropractor about the frequency of the treatments he was receiving, and the chiropractor told him that he could arrange for a lawyer to be hired to recover the charges that were being made by the chiropractor. And Mr. Lynch, in his affidavit, stated that he didn't want a lawyer. He was concerned that the chiropractor's billings and the lawyer's fees would consume all of any proceeds of any settlement that he would receive from Opal Amundson's insurer. It later developed that Mr. Lynch questioned the chiropractor about the treatments that his wife was receiving, and told him that he didn't think that his mentally impaired wife was in need of further treatments, that they had been stiff and sore at the outset of, immediately after the accident, but they had begun feeling better. And he said that at that time, the chiropractor told him that he could have legal action taken against this elderly man if he did not bring his wife, as he had been requested to do.
Did the chiropractor deny this in any affidavit or anything that he submitted to
the court? He did not, Your Honor. The statements made in the affidavit of Henry Lynch are completely uncontroverted.
The only thing I think he did controvert was that he raised his fees after the insurance claim.
I think that was only controverted by counsel, Your Honor. Okay. It was not controverted by the chiropractor in any respect. It was only controverted by counsel in the brief. But they acknowledged all of this other egregious behavior that has taken place.
I want to go back. You started your argument very well by stating the issue statement, which I always appreciate. But I want to challenge your issue statement. You said the question here is whether this type of an assignment is going to be upheld in South Dakota. But do we really have to decide that, or do we have to decide that under the facts of this case that this assignment should be upheld, as opposed to deciding whether all such assignments should be decided?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's much broader than that. I think it's a question of all of whether all of these types of assignments ought to be upheld, because this court has recognized in Schultz versus State Farm Mutual Insurance Company that the common law prohibition against the assignment of personal injury claims still prevails. On that particular issue, when we're speaking of this is a common law issue, and this court has said quite some time ago that has acknowledged our statutes in 1-1-22 and 1-1-23 that the common law prevails unless the sovereign will has made an expression to the contrary. And that expression to the contrary, of course, is found in our Constitution, our statutes, and our ordinances. and in the state of South Dakota, there has been no abrogation of the common law against the assignment of personal injury claims, with one exception, and that appears in Title 4412. This court is quite certain is very familiar with the hospital lien statutes that have been enacted by the legislature and have existed for quite some time. This is a limited abrogation of the common law.
But this is not an assignment of the claim. It's an assignment of proceeds, isn't it?
It's an assignment of the proceeds, Your Honor. And courts that hold otherwise, then I would urge this court make that distinction. But between the assignment of a personal injury claim and the price and the assignment of the proceeds of a personal injury claim, Your Honor, but other courts that have held to the contrary have visited the public policy considerations behind the assignment of the proceeds of the personal injury claim and have refused to recognize any distinction. Most notably, the courts in Quality Chiropractic versus Farmers Insurance Company of Arizona, a New Mexico Court of Appeals decision in 2002, which was followed in 2006 by the Midtown Chiropractic versus Illinois Farmers Insurance Company, a 2006 case decided by the Indiana Supreme Court. And then more recently, the Supreme Court of Ohio's decision in West Broad Chiropractic versus American Family Insurance Company. In each of those decisions, these courts have looked at the public policy considerations, and they've in the Supreme Court of the state of Ohio has said that these types of agreements are akin to champerty and maintenance. This court has defined champerty and maintenance in McKellips versus McIntosh as intermeddling by a stranger in litigation of another. For profit, gaining an interest in litigation, and maintenance, supporting, or encouraging in somehow the litigation.
If you only have an assignment of the proceeds, you have no say in how the litigation plays out, unlike if you did have control over the cause of action itself.
Well, Your Honor, there's some courts have said that, but when an assignment like this is made to an assignee, such as a chiropractor, the chiropractor then fronts the services. And in this particular case, the evidence is that the services became more expensive. And then the chiropractor offered to hire a lawyer. Well, we know when assignees start hiring lawyers, they're going to be hiring lawyers with whom they have familiarity through frequent referrals. And then the chiropractor appears in the litigation. The result is that, as the Supreme Court of Ohio pointed out, that this type of procedure actually hurts injured parties. It complicates the settlement of this litigation, like it did in this particular case. In this particular case, Mr. Lynch, disputing the reasonableness and the necessity of the chiropractic treatment that both he and his wife had received, would not settle the case if DeSchmidt Insurance Company put the name of the chiropractor on the settlement check. And so the only way that DeSchmidt Insurance Company, having an interest in settling the case for its insured, is DeSchmidt Insurance Company went ahead and settled the case upon Mr. Lynch's agreement that he would pay the chiropractor. When Andrew Chiropractic discovered that payment hadn't been made, they demanded payment of the Lynches. The Lynches refused. There was a dispute between them under the facts as set forth in Mr. Lynch's affidavit. And DeSchmidt Insurance Company likewise refused because they had the agreement of the Lynches, and also because this type of an agreement is unenforceable and violates the common law against the assignment of personal injury claims.
I've got to ask you about this common law thing, because the common law really isn't established in South Dakota with respect to proceeds. We know what it is with respect to claims. Schultz decided, or at least implied, that a subrogation right is not in violation of that. But until the legislature weighs some of these modern public policy things that you're talking about, they really haven't spoken. We don't really have common law on this at this point. Other than South Dakota has long recognized the distinction between a legal assignment and an equitable assignment, going back to the 1800s. So there is some precedent in South Dakota for finding a distinction, which some of the courts do, between the assignment of claims and proceeds. And let me just ask you, isn't that our common law? Isn't that the common law in South Dakota right now, that we do recognize a distinction, at least in general, with respect to illegal and equitable assignments?
Yes, as a general proposition, that's true, Your Honor. But when you become involved with personal injury claims, then it's an entirely different matter. We start with the idea that the common law prohibits the assignment of a personal injury claim. Well, what is a personal injury claim? What makes up a personal injury claim? There are two essential things: the right to pursue the claim and the right to the proceeds of the claim. And to try to circumvent that common law by saying, oh, we're just going to assign the most significant part of the claim, the proceeds, would be an end run around the common law. Moreover, it would be inconsistent with the decision of this Supreme Court in Troughton versus Mutual Insurance Company, where the court had under consideration whether an injured party could bring a direct action against an insurance company to recover medical payments. In that particular case, this court construed the provisions of 5823(1) as stating that you can only bring a direct action against an insurance company after judgment has been entered and there's been execution on the judgment and the execution has been returned unsatisfied. That's the only time you can have a direct action against an insurance company. In this particular instance, Unruh Chiropractic would have placed itself in a better position than the injured party. The injured party, the Lynches, under the decisions of this court, would have no direct action against DeSchmidt Insurance Company, but by the terms of the assignment of the proceeds, Unruh Chiropractic would. And they've run end round, they would run end round 5823(1)
could the Lynches
and the common
any
law.
Greater, I mean, can't, the Lynches can't assign any greater right than they have themselves, can they?
Well, I would think not, Your Honor. And that would be another reason to reject this. But I think it's important, when we're talking about the common law, Your Honors, and the legislative intention, nothing could be more clear in this particular case. You know, in the Indiana case, in the Midtown Chiropractic versus Illinois Farmers Insurance Company, that court pointed out its hospital lien statutes was the only abrogation of their common law as well. What they didn't have in the Indiana that we have here is we have direct evidence of the legislative intention. We know that the legislature has only abrogated the common law with regard to hospitals licensed in the state of South Dakota, and we also know through legislative history that this court can take judicial notice of bills introduced in journals. The Gravening versus Zoller case and the state X. Rel. Kornman versus Larson case is that this court has decided, has stated that the court can take judicial notice of journals and legislative action. And in 2005, House Bill 1175 was presented to the South Dakota legislature, and it would have provided for physicians and chiropractors to be included with hospitals among those entities that were entitled to a lien against the proceeds of any payment that was received by an injured party or the representative of an injured party. You know, and the legislature rejected it.
Let me ask you about that, though, because that's a statutory lien, an involuntary statutory lien, that's given to hospitals and ambulance companies, irrespective of the consent of the injured party. That's far different than a contractual assignment that someone voluntarily gives ostensibly to obtain medical services.
Well, it is, Your Honor, and it is an abrogation of the common law. It's a very limited abrogation of the common law, and we would submit that it shows the legislative intention. And the Supreme Court of Indiana pointed that out, and they said it's better left to the legislature to weigh these issues and the public policy considerations.
But if we leave it to the legislature, technically, if we leave it to the legislature, we don't act. We don't make the decision. Where does that leave us?
Well, by leaving it to the legislature, would require this court to reverse the order of the circuit court that affirmed the magistrate court.
That's not leaving it to the legislature.
Well, I think it is. I would submit that it is, Your Honor, because in terms of the issue of whether or not these types of liens would be enforceable, you would be leaving it to the legislature to decide that they are enforceable rather than this court abrogating the common law. contrary to statute and contrary to these to the court's earlier decisions in the case.
Is there a distinction between lien and assignment, a personal contract where you've assigned it?
Well, Your Honor, there is one particular case in the state of Missouri where that distinction was made, but it's a distinction without a difference because it creates the same circumstance. It creates a direct action, whether you call it a lien that gives the assignee, in this case the chiropractor, a direct action against the insurer, or whether you call it an assignment, still a direct action against the insurer. It still has the effect of abrogating the common law against the assignment of personal injury claims.
Let me take you back to the distinction without a difference. It looks to me like most of the cases that have adopted your view simply say it's a distinction without a difference. But they really don't analyze, you know, the long-standing law that does distinguish between legal assignments and equitable assignments.
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree. I think that those states that are most prominent, and I think that they would submit their opinions most well-reasoned in Arizona, or excuse me, in New Mexico, Arizona, and in Ohio, are the courts that have taken those public policy considerations into consideration in adopting their opinions and their decisions, holding that
they've looked at the more modern policy considerations. Those courts really aren't looking at the old common law distinctions between assignments and equitable legal assignments. They're looking at modern policy reasons.
That's largely true, Your Honor. However, in the West Broad Chiropractic case versus American Family Insurance, the Supreme Court of Ohio said one of the things that bothered that court so much was that these arrangements were akin to champerty and maintenance for the reasons that we discussed earlier.
But you know, West Broad, if I remember my cases correctly, isn't that the one where there's really only two justices that concur in the opinion that discusses all these modern considerations?
Your Honor, I've got to be candid with you. I don't recall that it was two,
It was a split vote, and you don't recall the particular vote.
Well, I simply recall that decision dealt in depth with the public policy considerations, and is the most recent decision of which at least I'm aware on this issue, and did express the modern view, but took into consideration the historical underpinnings for the reason that the assignment of a personal injury claim is prohibited under the common law, going back to champerty and maintenance, and going back to the idea in medieval times that you couldn't have an assignment of a personal injury claim because a personal injury claim didn't survive the death of an assignor. And in some jurisdictions, when we had the adoption of the survivorship statutes in the country, changed their decisions. But most did not. But in terms of the historical perspective, I would submit, as the Supreme Court in the state of Ohio wrote, that these arrangements are akin to champerty and maintenance. And moreover, the public policy considerations, Your Honor, is that that we've not yet talked about, is that if this court were to sanction the assignment of proceeds of personal injury claims as opposed to the assignment of a personal injury claim itself, these assignments could be used as currency.
2 minutes.
Thank you. We wouldn't be limited to the use of the assignments for medical purposes. They could be assigned to a finance company, a credit card company, a used car dealer. And then the tortfeasor and the insurer in the position of having to look at these various multitude of assignments where there's multiple assignments, decide which ones are valid, what the current level of the debt is, and what is the priority. And if there is, in circumstances where there is less insurance money than there are assignments, the question is, how do you handle that from a pro rata point of view, or do you? And it subjects the insurer to multiple lawsuits. Your Honor, for all those reasons, we would respectfully urge the court that the order of the circuit court affirming the magistrate court be reversed, matter remanded to the circuit court for the entry of summary judgment in the favor of DeSchmidt Insurance. Thank you very much.
One question.
Yes, sir.
Have you counted noses on the cases? I mean, I've read a lot of cases on this, and I don't have a head count.
Your Honor, I don't know if I could respond to that.
Just numerically.
When the case of Karp versus Spitzer was decided and by the Arizona Court of Appeals, and if I remember correctly, it was in 1979, they said that the majority view was consistent with the position that we've taken in this case. Now, since that time, I think the better cases have come from, like I've said, New Mexico, Arizona, and Ohio. And if it's a majority, it's thin. There's a sharp divergence in the cases in the courts that have had this issue before it.
Thank you, Mr. Bonnewald. Mr. Even, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, justices, counsel, students, and faculty. This appeal is about a very specific assignment of proceeds that was executed by the Lynches. And it's also about the right of private parties, private individuals, to enter into contracts. This assignment of proceeds that was signed by the Lynches is very specific, and it's very limited, justices. It's limited in scope. It's limited by being contingent. The very language of the assignment, and we need to look to the document itself. The very language of the assignment limits any right or interest or recovery to the extent of the unpaid chiropractic charges that are existing at the time of any settlement. It is also contingent upon whether or not there is a settlement. If there's no settlement, if there's no judgment, if there's no recovery, this assignment has absolutely no effect. This is a voluntary assignment. This is a voluntary agreement that was entered into by the Lynches. They agreed to assign their interest in any recovery, in any settlement, any judgment to the clinic. That's what they did. They agreed that it was limited to the extent of the unpaid chiropractic bill and for the unpaid services that were related to this specific motor vehicle collision. Further, it's very, very clear and limited in its language, justices. It clearly states this is an assignment of proceeds, and it is not an assignment of a claim or a cause of action. And I think that's the rub here in this case. We would not argue that the assignment of a cause of action is prohibited, but this is not what we're talking about in this case.
Can I just ask you a question? There were some challenges by the about the amount of charges by your client, and there was some dispute by the name escapes me now who received the services, that this was too high a charge. How would that work then when it's assigned? Who challenges that, or does it just absolutely go unchallenged? Because if it's assigned, then we just assume that whatever your client charges is going to be what the insurance company has to pay.
I think in that instance there would be a dispute
Yeah, but could the insurance company dispute it? They're not a party to that.
Well, I think that the patient would then have to dispute it.
But and can the patient if they've assigned it? I guess that's my question.
Well, I think what would happen in that instance and what this particular document and this assignment provides for is that when and if there is a settlement, in that instance, the settlement check should contain the name as payee of the patient and also the clinic. And then you've got a check with both names on, and in order to get it resolved, the patient and the clinic would have to work that out. But the insurance company dismissed in this case would abide by the assignment, because the assignment does authorize and direct whoever receives notice of this assignment of proceeds to include the name of the clinic on the check.
Mr. Von Wall brought up, where would this put the situation where you would have more assignments than you have proceeds in a claim? How is the insurance company then supposed to work out priorities? How would that work?
In how I think that would work is if there is notice of assignments, a notice of multiple assignments, if the patient is going to do that or the claimant is going to do that, and there's proper notice, then the insurance company would be well served to put all names on the check. And those parties would have to work that out and settle that out. But the duty of the insurance company to honor this assignment flows from the patient. If the patient's going to give multiple assignments of proceeds, that could be a problem for the patient.
They have to work it out. But that's the nub of the problem here. What if your client says, "I don't want to work it out. I want every dime of this my charges, and I'm not settling for anything less, and I'm going to hold up the settlement forever if I don't get whatever it is I've charged."
If that is the case, and if the clinic wants every dime of what they provided service for, I would submit that they're entitled to that. And if the patient does not want to get into a circumstance in a situation like that, don't sign this assignment. This is entirely voluntary. And the option for the patient is, I'm going to pay as I go. I'm going to go somewhere else. I don't know how many chiropractors and doctors there are in the area, but there are a lot of them. And so this is a voluntary thing.
Let me ask you about that, though, because, when you go to the doctor, the first thing you do, they give you this stack of forms, and even as lawyers, I don't think we read them. I think we sign them. And I'm not saying that's an excuse. But the other thing is, when you're seeking medical treatment, is that the time when somebody should be making this kind of a, quote, voluntary decision or not? I mean, do we want to foster that kind of policy, that you should be making that kind of a decision under the stress of asking for medical treatment? Is it really voluntary?
It is voluntary, and particularly in this case, Justice.
Let me put it this way. I've been to the doctor a couple times, and I've never seen anybody look at the papers and say, "Nah, I don't like this deal. I'm going down the street to somebody else."
That's a different issue. If we're going to say that when people go into the doctor and they sign documents that they don't have the effect because of where they are and what they're doing. The fact of the matter is these folks, the Lynches in this case, had treated with this clinic before. They voluntarily showed up at the door of the clinic and said, I was in a motor vehicle crash. Will you treat me?" And the clinic has the option of saying, "Well, pay as you go, and this is what it's going to cost." Or they have the option of offering this, and it benefits both parties. And it is voluntary, and it benefits the clinic because then the clinic has a security interest, a security agreement.
Maybe you don't know the answer, but I'd appreciate if you could tell me. We see so many of these cases around the country, and they all these assignment of proceeds, many of them involve chiropractors. Why is that? Is that because medical insurance doesn't typically pay chiropractor charges? Or is this, what's going on is most of these cases seem to be chiropractor cases?
I don't know the exact answer. From my own experience, I can tell you that there are some insurance plans that don't cover all chiropractic, or they might limit the number of visits. But what happens in these circumstances is, commonly, an injured person will walk in the door, and the day they walk in the door, nobody knows what the extent of the injury is going to be, and nobody knows what the extent of the bill is going to be. And so these folks have medical payments coverage under their auto carrier, and they might have $2,000 or $5,000, and they start treating, and we don't know if that bill is going to exceed insurance coverage available. And so the reason this came about, this kind of an agreement came about, is because there are instances where the clinic will get burned, where exactly what happened in this case happens. The clinic provides treatment, and they provide treatment for who knows how long, depending on the injury, and they rack up a bill, and the injured person is not in a position to pay. Many times these injured people are out of work, or they're just not in a position to pay. And so what do you do? You come up with an assignment of proceeds if they want to, they being the patient, if they want to enter.
All right, well, why is this different than an assignment of the claim?
It's very different from an assignment of the claim, because an assignment of the claim lets the assignee have control over the claim. If this were an assignment of the claim, the clinic could then litigate and step into the shoes of the Lynches and have control over the claim.
Well, could they? Is there a cause of action by the person with an assignment of the proceeds against the assignor if they don't proceed in act or with a claim against the insurance company? Are you creating another cause of action?
If the patient does not proceed against DeSmet in this case, I believe under this there would be a cause of action. Yes, that the Lynches would have against DeSmet based on.
Well, I'm saying UNRRA against the Lynches for
absolutely
not proceeding to settle a claim when they have a right under the proceeds.
Absolutely not, and it says so very clearly in here. It states in the language of the assignment of proceeds that in the event of a settlement or a recovery or a judgment, then this kicks in. If there's no settlement, this does not have any effect. Now, the clinic would always be able to bring an action, a collection action, against the patient, against the Lynches. The clinic chose not to in this case. The clinic did not sue the Lynches. But that would be a different independent collection type claim.
Why shouldn't we just follow Arizona, Illinois, Arkansas, Indiana, Ohio? I mean, these states have all held against you.
We should not, because South Dakota has long recognized an equitable assignment, and it goes all the way back to the Sykes case back in the 1890s. And when those cases cited by the opponent, when they talk about a distinction without a difference, there is a difference, a very profound difference. And that is that the clinic in this case does not have any control whatsoever over the claim, the cause of action, the litigation, nothing. And it's demonstrated and proved in this case, because what happened in this case is that the Lynches, the patients, settled their cases for like $19,000 with DeSmet. DeSmet received notice of these. We have the green card. They were served certified mail. They received notice. They ignored it. They never called the clinic. They negotiated settlements with the Lynches and essentially burned the clinic. And the clinic still hasn't been paid. And the Lynches recovered from DeSmet Insurance for not only their pain and suffering, but for the bills, the chiropractic bills. And it was only about $2,200, a little more than $2,200, and the total settlements were $19,000. This could have been solved, and this would have been no problem had DeSmet put the clinic's name on the check. When this all went down and the settlements occurred, the clinic contacted the Lynches and said, "We understand you got a settlement, pay us our bill." They refused. So then the clinic next went to DeSmet Insurance and said, "We sent you an assignment and properly noticed you, and you didn't put our name on the check. Pay us."
Under your theory, is there any difference on who the assignment could go to? Could they assign it to a bank, to a Kmart, whoever? Is there any limitation under your theory?
Well, in this particular assignment, this is a very limited document that limits the assignment of proceeds to the unpaid balance of chiropractic services relating to this crash, and it is also limited contingent upon settlement or recovery. Whether or not that could be extended, I haven't considered that. I should, but I am thinking of this particular case that is before us right now and this document that we seek to enforce. And I know that Mr. Vonwald talks about currency of litigation if causes of action are able to be assigned, but that blur there is a distinction And that's what is at the heart of this case. And that is an assignment of proceeds, an equitable assignment of proceeds from a personal injury claim that is contingent upon a settlement in the first place is very different from the assignment of a cause of action. And that's not what happened in this case. And at the end of the day, the clinic is holding the bag and still unpaid for the services that it provided when the Lynches came in voluntarily and said, we've been in an accident, we want you to treat us.
Are you completed?
How do you, what's your...
I guess you're not.
What's your notes, Count? Is there a prevailing view among the courts on this? Do you see a prevailing view?
I do see a prevailing view, Your Honor. Mr. Justice, I cited cases in my brief, but it's Maryland, Virginia, New York, and Nevada are the leading jurisdictions, and there are quite a number of cases that talk about this distinction, that explain this distinction, and it's sound reasoning, and they are in my brief, and I believe that's the prevailing theory.
When you said your client is out, they still have a right to take an action against the Lynches, do they not?
They do. They could file a collection. These folks are in their 80s, and the clinic chose not to.
The clinic
They chose not to. In fact, the Lynches have not appeared, but they were brought in as a third party defendant by DeSmit. They never appeared in the case. There was never a default taken by DeSmit against the Lynches, and so they're not here today, and they've never appeared. So, Justices, based on that, I would respectfully request that you would affirm the lower courts and enforce these assignments of proceeds. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yu. Mr. Von Wall, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I have a question right out of the
Certainly.
We talked a lot today about public policy, the benefits of these, recognizing these against other arguments to the contrary. But if we don't recognize the assignments as valid, are we limiting people's access to medical treatment if that's the only way they have to obtain that medical treatment, if they don't have the cash credit?
Well, Your Honor, it's possible that you would be doing that, and I think that's an important question. But that is a question for the legislature rather than the court, given the common law and this court.
But the legislature's not here, and we are.
Understood. But those are the types of policy considerations that have been debated in this country during the last year. And while there's differences of opinion about that, those are matters for the legislative branch of government rather than the judicial branch of the government. And this court has made that so clear on a number of occasions and pointed to our statutes, 1-2-23 and 1-2-24, where we embody the common law prevails until we have an expression of the sovereign will. Again, the Constitution, statutes, and ordinances. And so that is reason enough to reject that. While that may, in some limited instance, it might serve the interests of somebody who wants to make that assignment, in this particular instance, it certainly did not. And in most instances, it will not. Because you can see by the facts of this case that it gives rise to unscrupulousness, abuse. In this particular case, and the last visit to the chiropractor, the chiropractor tried to get mentally impaired Dorothy Lynch to do away with the power of attorney that she had given her son. Mr. Lynch lives with his son. Mrs. Lynch lives at Prairie Crossings in Sioux Falls. These types of things the egregiousness associated with this particular case illustrates the public policy considerations that need to be protected, Your Honor, and would require careful consideration by the legislature in enacting, if it does ever choose to enact, a lien in favor of a chiropractor. Your Honors, and I think that Justice Zinter pointed out very well in this particular case, when one goes to seek medical care, they don't understand fully the repercussions of those instruments that they're asked to sign. We know that as lawyers. We are challenged in the few minutes that we have before we receive the services that we go to get to even read those papers. But we put our faith in the people that present them to us, our hospitals, our doctors, and we have no idea that they're going to bear upon us in the way that this bears upon the lenches and complicated their lives.
I mean, you know, sense to surgery and those kinds of things, unless there's a problem, we usually uphold those things. And is there anything that happened when they signed these that would suggest that they didn't understand what they were signing?
Well, I think that, you know, people that are 85 years of age, 87 years of age, Your Honor, living under the care of a son who has power of attorney, all of that suggests that they wouldn't come there with the skill and capability that others might have. And they were very vulnerable in this particular instance. And when we're talking about the assignments generally, we're talking historically, the Sykes case has been mentioned, and that was an 1891 case where South Dakota gave recognition, Your Honors, to equitable assignments. But 6 years after that, it wasn't every equitable assignment that this court would countenance. 6 years after that, in 1897, there's a case called State to the Use of Perkins versus Barnes, in which the Hyde County State's Attorney assigned his salary to a mortgage company. And this court back in 1897 said, no, we are not going to approve that assignment. Why? It violates the public policy. It impinges upon the public's right to have the services of its public officials. And so it's not every assignment that gets the blessing of the law in this court. And this is one of those, Your Honor, that ought not to be approved by this court. And for all those reasons, Your Honor, again, we would respectfully urge that the order of the circuit court be reversed and remanded so that summary judgment might be entered in favor of DeSchmidt Insurance Company. And I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ronald.